You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world every weekday. It is Thursday, November the 19th, once again coming to you from Bahrain, just 24 hours from the big race day, and we will continue our build-up later in this edition by talking to Maddie O'Mara, who's been responsible for the preparation of the Andrew Balding train Bangkok here, having just returned from the US, where she was looking after Cameco. Looking rather more immediately at today's headlines, the key headline for British racing, at any rate, is that it appears as though the sport is going to be one of those that is given an emergency grant, an emergency bailout, if you like, from the government. Details will follow later today. We'll keep you up to speed with that tomorrow. Trainer Alan King, who's had such a great season on the flat and over jumps, has launched a broadside at Cheltenham Racecourse for ground, which he described as a joke at the November meeting. I'll be talking in a little while to Ruby Walsh and getting his thoughts on that. And at a time when racing all around the world is trying to innovate, trying to change, trying to find ways of keeping its coffers bolstered, the announcement of the teams for the new Racing League team competition to take place on Sky Sports next summer has attracted perhaps a little more interest than otherwise it might have done, particularly with the news that Donica and Joseph O'Brien would now form a team to bring over and take on teams from Newmarket, the north and the south of England. Jane Mangan, the RTE and Racing TV broadcaster, is my guest today. Jane, how does this competition appeal to you now?
I have an open mind. I think anything that is a new initiative that could bring a new audience to the industry is important, and not just a new audience, but reinvigorate the interest of the existing audience. I think this is an exciting venture, and I'm interested to see how it works. So the logistics and the plans for the teams, obviously to have an international interest is good for any competition, but just to see how it all comes together, I'll be interested to see the jockeys that are that come on board as well, and obviously the fine details are yet to be finalised, but at the moment I'm excited about this, and I think anything that is good for racing is good for everybody involved with the sport.
To what extent do you think the addition of the O'Brien brothers, Joseph and Donica, will add interest from Ireland? Do you think it will be embraced as a concept in Ireland as well?
Absolutely. Look, the O'Brien name is a brand as such. You don't have to be big into tennis to know the Williams sisters. You don't have to be big into soccer to know who Lionel Messi is. And the O'Briens are kind of that flag bearers for racing, particularly in Ireland. So if they are flagshipping an event like this, it could draw in people who aren't particularly race goers weekly or even daily. So I think their participation is a big thing, not only from Ireland, but they're obviously internationally renowned, as are many of the British trainers taking part. And it's a big endorsement for the Racing League to say that the O'Briens want to be a part of this.
Now, interestingly, the Racing League have dropped their plans to make their races whipless. That was going to be the plan originally, but their chief executive, Jeremy Ray, has said, "We made the decision because we didn't want this to become a referendum on the whip, especially in light of the fact that the BHA is reviewing the current whip rules." I'll put my cards on the table, Jane. I'm pleased they've dispensed with this because I think it would have detracted from what they're trying to achieve.
Yes, it's a clever move. I could see what they were trying to do. They were trying to be innovative, but realistically, it was going to be a debate and it was going to detract from what the Racing League is all about. It is about competition. It is about embracing racing. It is not about sparking a debate that has been on the table and off the table for decades now. So I think it's a smart move. They want to paddle their own canoe and not get into shark waters at this very infancy stage.
It's a weird thing to say, but my feeling, I don't know if you share it, is that the Racing League has been done a bit of a favour by COVID, because people's minds to new things are naturally going to be more open. In a sport that is struggling financially, to have a big injection of cash for horses that aren't at the very top level, it's what everybody's been calling for.
Yes, and I think COVID has given us time now that obviously we're all pretty busy now, but it gave us time to think how we can improve, how we could change things. The racing is obviously a wonderful sport that has been around for hundreds of years, but we don't have to continue to play by the same rule book. And Racing League is just something fresh, and it gives us a new perspective on things. And if it works, it'll look brilliant. But at least I think we have to try some new initiatives, see how well the Shergar Cup works. And this is something similar. So COVID has given us all something to think about. And this is a time to have an open mind. And the Racing League gives us something fresh.
And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out through the weeks of next summer. Now let's tack back to the more familiar shores of the Cheltenham Festival, more specifically the Road to Cheltenham, because the programme of that name, very popular it is too, returns to our screens this week in the company of Lydia Hislop and Ruby Walsh. And Ruby joins me now. Ruby, where do we find you?
You find me on the M9 motorway from William Mullins's, heading back home to record the Road to Cheltenham with Lydia Hislop, which I have to do via Zoom this year, but at least I can do it.
Exactly, and it's not a chore. I'm sure it's a pleasure, because the last series, the last season, was a fabulous success, really popular, enjoyed by everybody, and you must be itching to get going again.
I enjoyed all of it till I did one by June. You made an absolute show of me by putting on a shirt and tie and dressing yourself up and made me look like a farmer. So I have my tyre picked out so I don't get showed up yet again.
Then you smartened up your act, and I know Lydia was very pleased about that. I think one of the things that people really responded to well was just your insight into riding those two tracks at Cheltenham.
I suppose I look at races maybe differently to most people, Nick, and I enjoy expressing what I see in a race. Now, I know I'm not the greatest tipster in the world, but I enjoy watching how a certain jockey goes about riding a race, or how a certain horse has adapted to conditions of a race. I do. I would have looked at races quite differently to tipsters or form guides all my life, and I enjoy looking at that and watching that and trying to explain to people what I see.
What I quite enjoy when I've walked a course with you at Cheltenham is, because it's such an unusual place and the ups and the downs and the twists and the turns and you're always turning, your analysis of pace of the race and where horses make their challenge is so much more interesting, say, than on a pan flat track.
Oh, it is, but that's an undulating track for you, and that's, I don't know, I guess I always found it, I never found Cheltenham too difficult, because we have loads of undulating tracks in Ireland that are much tighter and sharper. Tramore, Galway, Downpatrick, Sligo, you know, when you have ridden on all of those tracks, you understand the undulations and where horses can make ground, where you shouldn't make ground, where you have to try and save a bit of energy, and where you can apply pressure. So Cheltenham is no different to that. Where on a dead flat track, it probably makes it a little bit more of a level playing field for riders, where you can seek an advantage. But on the undulating tracks like Cheltenham, there's loads of places you can nick a little bit.
So the first episode is being recorded today, and then you'll show an episode every Thursday right the way through until the festival. Is that the idea?
Every Thursday, yeah, I think that's the idea. Every Thursday night at 9 p.m. The Road to Cheltenham will be on. So yeah, we're recording today. Obviously, with the Betfair Chase on the weekend, we probably won't be touching too much on the Gold Cup horses, but with the Morgiana Hurdle last weekend, we most certainly have something to reflect on as regards the Cheltenham Hurdle horses.
Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you've got to say about Abracadabra and Saint-Roi and what might happen if they meet again, but I don't want to steal the thunder of the programme this evening. Ruby, I did want to just finish by asking you about the ground at Cheltenham last weekend and Alan King's comment that he thought the ground was a joke.
That hasn't changed, Nick. That has always been the scenario in Cheltenham, that they have to water for their October meeting for the safety of all the horses, and therefore, when they water in October, it can get slow in November. But that's why you walk the track and figure out where the best of the ground is, and the wider you keep, the more chance you have of staying off. The getting on ground is a little less water, but with jump racing you need to have safe ground. So Cheltenham are caught between the rock and the hard place, and they need to water for that October meeting, and then it becomes a bit slow in November. But if you want nice ground by March, you have to save some ground for then. So it's for then, so they save ground for March. I think it's, look, Alan King has a fair point, and it's one that's relevant to how he sees it. But I think track management is not the easiest thing in the world. Punches don't have to do the same at the weekend. There's only a limited amount of fresh ground. But turf husbandry is quite a difficult task, and Cheltenham only have X amount of ground. They can't go outside the running red in the back straight and head up to the Ellenborough Park to rob some ground. They can only use what they have. and I think they're making the best of what they do have.
Ruby, thanks for chatting to me. Enjoy the new season, and we will be tuning in on Racing TV 9 o'clock every Thursday night.
Thanks, Nick.
Well, my thanks to Ruby. Jane Mangan rejoins me now. And interesting to hear Ruby's thoughts. He's very diplomatic about the situation at Cheltenham, understanding the pros and the cons of having to water before the October meeting and the effect that might have on the ground in November, Jane. But Alan King didn't spare Cheltenham in his comments in the weekend, calling the ground a joke last weekend. What are your thoughts?
I'm not dissimilar to Ruby. I think if Simon Clayes opts to not water in October, then you risk having unsafe ground, and that's not what anybody wants. Ultimately, if you are running at Cheltenham, you're probably, you know, that can be somebody's ambition, whether it's the October meeting or the March meeting. That's what you want. So Simon Clayes has a difficult job. The track is, there's obviously two tracks, the old track and the new track. Would it be an option? And maybe they should explore the option of running the October meeting on just one of the tracks and saving the other track for the November meeting. Maybe it's not that simple, but things maybe need to be looked at. Because Cheltenham is not a Newbury or an Ascot. It's not wide enough that you have fresh ground, that you can spare fresh ground for a later meeting. It's not, that isn't an option. It's quite undulating. It's very tight, and their hands are tied to a certain extent. But I did watch last week's meeting with a little bit of frustration, because it looked very deep and false in places. The intersection of the courses where you cross over where horses have run on the other track, it looked quite false. So look, I can understand both sides. It's not a simple solution, but maybe it needs to be looked at to see if there's any kind of compromise that could be made.
Yeah, the idea of running that October meeting on the new course, I guess, is a possibility. Then that would give you 6 weeks to get it back again for the December meeting, which always tends to be run on ground that's on the quicker side. And you can see why, because it hasn't had as much water on it.
Yeah, it's obviously, you have to understand that when you falsify or you water ground in a false manner, when the rain does come, it isn't a natural soft, it's a deep soft. So look, I've been to Cheltenham, it's not as simple as us just discussing not watering ground. You can't, God forbid, we went and had good to firm ground in October and horses and jockeys got injured. That's not an option either. So we have to try and compromise and get the best result for everybody. But it is frustrating watching last week. Good horses, all horses got tough races, and this is only the beginning of the season.
I think we would agree, wouldn't we? No, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, that Alan King has at least opened up a reasonable debate to be had here, because we want to safeguard the future of this fixture, which is a really important one at the sort of beginning of the jump season proper.
Well, absolutely. But Alan is perfectly entitled to his opinion. And if you do open up this debate, it's because he wants it to be better than it is. And it's because everybody wants to have the best conditions possible. So it'll just force everybody to reanalyze and think if there could be a way to improve it, to make those adjustments. I would take it on board. I wouldn't take it as an attack.
Let's talk about the big race today, because it may well have a significant bearing on what Ruby and Lydia are going to talk about today and this evening, presenting Percy Kenboy Mona Lee running at Thurles. What a coup for the track.
Yeah, a mini Gold Cup on the Thursday in November. You have three-time Grade 1 winner Kenboy, one-time Irish Gold Cup winner, presenting Percy, nearly favoured for the Gold Cup at one stage of his life when he trounced Mona Lee in the 2018 RSA Chase. And then you have Mona Lee, who finished fourth in the Gold Cup last year, arguably a little bit unlucky when he got into interference with Santini at the top of the hill. So these horses are rated in their 160s, proper race, 2.6 miles on soft ground at Thurles. If it was, this was run at Cheltenham in the November meeting, this would be the flagship event, but it's not. It's being run today at 1:20 at Thurles, and it'll be very, very informative. Presenting Percy, the only horse with a benefit of a run under his belt, but he's not even favourite. Kenboy's got that tag, and he didn't arguably run up to his form at all last year.
And who's going to win?
Look what you're doing. You're trying to say, look, I have my tips for the end of the programme, right? The realistic part of this, Nick, is Mona Lee's 9-4. I think presenting Percy's 2-1 and Kenboy's 11-8. So I wouldn't back any of the three of them. They're all too short. There's no value, I think, between the three of them.
Okay, well, let's transition to looking at this weekend's big chase, Haydock Park, Jane. Clan des Obeux, Lost in Translation, Bristol Dumais and co. Who appeals to you as the likeliest winner?
I think the only horse where I can definitively say the best could be yet to come is with Lost in Translation. When the Tizard horses were out of form last March, he ran huge in the Gold Cup to finish third, ran a huge race. I thought that's the piece of form that I'm going to take into this weekend. Obviously, Clan des Obeux deserves the upspec. Dual King George winner, Paul Nicholas staying chaser, what's not to like? And then, of course, you have Bristol Dumais, former twice a winner of this race in the past, but got beaten by Lost in Translation last year in a four-runner race. I think there's only going to be five runners this year, and I could see the same result.
Now, some cautiously positive news, but we have been flagging this up a little bit over the last few weeks, that racing is one of those sports that's set to receive a government rescue package in Great Britain anyway. That's going to be announced sometime today. So we'll pick up on this tomorrow, Jane, but it looks as though there might be some respite for racing, or I should say probably the race courses.
Yes, all is welcome, Nick. Of course, we'll take what we get, but we must be aware that this isn't a solution. This is just to wade in when we need it. But realistically, this isn't going to solve the long-term problems of British racing and its efficiency with self-funding. So you've obviously debated this much on the podcast before. You'll talk about it tomorrow, and I'm sure you find out what the rescue package actually entails. But this is a one-off. This is not a long-term solution.
Well, here in Bahrain, I'm really pleased to be joined by Maddie O'Mara, who has the responsibility of travelling internationally with horses trained by Andrew Balding. What a season they've had. Maddie's just been in the United States with Cameco, where he ran in the Breeders' Cup Mile, and is here in Bahrain with Bangkok, who's got a great chance in tomorrow's Bahrain International Trophy. Maddie, I guess you're enjoying this little flurry of travelling at the moment. Not too tired?
I am enjoying it massively. A little bit jet lagged, I'm not going to lie, but I can't complain.
I mean, I think the truth is that at the moment, with everybody locked down in grey, cold Britain, neither you nor I are going to get any semblance of sympathy, no matter how much we protest that we're working hard.
No, absolutely zero. You're very true, very true.
How much satisfaction does it give you to accompany these horses on these foreign trips? Is it a real highlight of your job?
Oh, absolutely. I love it. I love every second of it. Having the sole responsibility with the marshal out there, it's amazing.
So you're given an enormous amount of responsibility. Just take us through it from sort of beginning to end, if you like. I know the Breeders' Cup is a very intense experience for you.
Yeah, Breeders' Cup is a stressful trip for me, especially this year, of course, because we had Cameco, which, you know, we were all under pressure with it. So from day one, it's quite stressful, but you know, you just crack on and get on with it, and by the end you're glad to have finished, but at the same time it's an amazing trip.
How does it differ looking after horses abroad to at home? Are there certain measures you have to take to ensure that they're in the best possible health?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's slightly similar, but you know, because they have most of the time had quite a long flight and things like that, you know, you need to make sure that they're rehydrated and that they're going to eat, because you know they can turn off their feed slightly, so you know you get many vet checks and drips put into them, and you just got to keep an eye on their temperature just in case there's a you know they've caught an infection whilst traveling and things like that, so you just keep a real close eye on them. And with their feed and their eating, you can, you know, you might have to slowly introduce their feed again because they've just turned off eating a little bit, but other than that, if everything else is fine, you would be looking after them the same as you are back at home. The exercise regime would be a little bit different, but other than that, it's pretty similar.
Is there a knack to that, i.e. knowing how to keep them sort of limbered up, if you like, but not do too much?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Andrew gives you your instructions every day, and most of the time, you know, they've come over and they're race fit already, so they don't really need to do too much, you know, just keep them happy. And you might give them a little blow on the grass or something a couple of days before they run to give their lungs a stretch. But other than that, yeah, you just kind of, you're just showing them around their new environment to make sure they can, you know, they've seen everything, so nothing's going to be a surprise on race day.
And Bangkok must have a pretty good chance in this Bahrain International Trophy. How do you think he's training?
Great. I mean, you know, he hasn't ran for a long time. So actually, you know, we've actually put a bit more work in than what you normally would when you come to a international race. But he's feeling great. And like you say, he's got a good chance. So hopefully he will do something special.
Does he strike you as that sort of horse who is best when he's a bit fresh?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, definitely. He's a fresh horse anyway at home, you know. He's always bouncing and he's full of life. But when it comes to racing, I definitely think, you know, the fresher he is, the better, because he's just got that bit more about him.
Maddie, thanks so much for talking to me. Best of luck.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
My thanks to Maddie, and don't forget you can follow the progress of all Team British Racing, and really well represented in Bahrain this week, with Great British Racing International on their Twitter, Instagram and Facebook social pages. Their Twitter handle is at GBRI_UK. Jane Mangan is still with me, and Jane, you're just going to send us home with a winner. You've teed it up, now you've got to deliver.
Yeah, so I actually went through today's card, Nick, and I couldn't identify much value. So I am going to give you a tip for today, but we're going to look ahead to the weekend as well. So my tip for today is Sais Gold in the 225 at Thurles. I think she's going to go off favourite, so if you want to get a bit of value, I might go for the Betfair Staying Hurdle at Haydock on Saturday. So the jam man, Ronan McNally, has been good stories, I think, of the season so far with Dreel Deal, but the jam man was an impressive winner of the Troy Town Chase last time, and I think he's going to be partnered by a certain Maxine O'Sullivan. Now, Maxine rode the jam man to a hat-trick of wins in 2018, where he went from a hurdles rating of 80 to 103. He'll be competing this weekend off a rating of 143. But considering the handicapper readjusted his chase mark after his demolition in the Troy Town Chase to 150, he could theoretically still be well in over hurdles off a mark of 143. So look, it's going to be an ultra-competitive race, but I think he was 10 to 1 yesterday. He's now something like 11 to 2. So we might be after missing the boat, but still better value than what he might be this weekend.
Okay, thank you. Received and understood. Jane Mangan, we will talk next week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this podcast, please do tell your friends, give us a rating, review us, and subscribe on all well-known podcast platforms. That was Thursday, November the 19th. I'll see you again tomorrow when it will be the second running of the Bahrain International Trophy. For now, bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.